This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2023, held at Faith Builders on August 1 to 4.
Good morning.
Good morning.
That's really nice to have that big good morning. Appreciate that. We are looking at building connections with our students through problems and frustrations. And our premise today is, in the middle of difficulty lies opportunity. I want to start us off with thinking about a scene from Shakespeare. Shakespeare's King Henry V, Acts 4, Scene 3, I believe. And in this scene, King Henry V and the English army are set to do battle against the French. And the king rides out to view the battle, to view the armies. And he sees the whole French army spread out on the plain, 60,000 strong. And the king's brother, his cousin, and an earl are discussing the battle. And they're discussing the fearful odds, 5-1. And cousin Westmoreland has just said that he wished we had 10,000 men from England. Just as the king rides back in, and the king says, "What? Who says that? Cousin Westmoreland?" "No, cousin." And then he makes this impassioned speech in which he tells the ones assembled that if we're going to die today, if we die today in battle, we're enough men to be mourned deeply. But if we win, we will be legendary. Warriors every year will feast, will make a feast on this day in our honor. And our exploits will grow every time they're told, as they often do. And he says, the king says, then, "We few, we happy few, we band of brothers, for he who sheds his blood with me today shall be my brother." Now, I really hope that in your school this year, there is very little or no bloodshed. I don't advise you to go to war against the French or any other nation. But Shakespeare taps into something in the human spirit that is very powerful. And that is that the person who goes through adversity with us will develop strong bonds with us. We will develop strong bonds with them. And the brother was talking this morning about how with God we have enough. And I was thinking about that too, that, you know, we're made in the image of God, and we know that often our connection to God grows when we go through difficulties. So it's true for us as humans too, relating to each other. So think about that. It is just a little bit ironic that I have this talk this morning, because I was going over my notes last night before I went to bed. I was all ready. And I noticed the title. You know, it's just a minor thing, the title, but it was different than I thought it was. And I thought I was actually supposed to do this one tomorrow. So I suddenly had to rearrange things It's not like I hadn't planned for this talk, it's just I had to fix it. And I thought, you know, that's ironic, because that's the way it is often in school. I've planned for something, and it's not quite the way I expected it to be. There's a little bit of, let me say this here. There's a book called Real Talk for Real Teachers, and it has a lot of good advice for teachers who've taught more than 1 year, or even the first year teachers, but maybe specifically for older teachers. But there's some good advice for a first year teacher. And one of the things that this writer says that he would say to a first time teacher on their first day is that you will have bad days. You will have bad days. Even after you've taught for years, you will have bad days. You still have bad days. You may have prepared everything carefully. You've presented it brilliantly. You've inserted numerous dad jokes at the right place and tried to remain positive, and still you will have a bad day. One of your co-teachers was maybe a bit snappy with you about how loud your students were across the hall when they were doing your lively flashcard drill or something like that. One of your students that you depend on to be a good role model was mean to one of the younger students. One of your parents called to ask if you would please make sure that Edith has no homework tonight because her cousins are coming, and you really want her to be able to play with her cousins, and your hair is falling out, and things are not perfect today. You will have bad days. Well, think about this. Even if you have bad days, that does not mean you are a bad teacher. And you're not a bad teacher just because you had a bad day, so don't quit trying. Show up the next day. You may become legendary if you don't, actually. As I get older and a little slower, I value this old saying that history is made by the people who show up. I like that. And I was thinking about this. It's important to show up. At a school board at the church I grew up in, actually, there was the school board was having a very difficult time finding a teacher. And it came time for school, and they didn't have a teacher. And one of the school board members, as I remember, is this old farmer, and probably a good farmer, honestly. But he was just a little bit sarcastic about this problem. He said, "Why is it so hard to find a teacher? Teaching isn't hard. I mean, you sit there and you play with the students. And why is this so hard? You can't find. I'll just teach. No problem. I'll just teach this year." Okay. School board said, "Sure, we'll teach. That's great." So he showed up for the first day of school, which is a half day of school, as it always is. And he was there that first half day. And he went home, and he called the school board and says, "I'm not going back. And I'm not meeting next year, and I'm not meeting next month. I'm not going back tomorrow. You have to find somebody else for tomorrow." So they did. So you might be legendary if you don't show up. But for the most part, history is made by people who show up. Few points here. Treat every person with respect. Every student. One public school teacher who had taught for many years was going over his rules and procedures on the first day of school, and there was a policy in effect for that school that the students would bring lunch tickets that the parents would give them, and they would turn them in, and they could have lunch at the cafeteria. This was for lower income students in particular. And the teacher went over this. He said, "It's important to eat lunch. Make sure you eat lunch every day. And if you lose your lunch ticket, you can come to me and I can loan you a dollar, because you'll have to pay a dollar if you don't have your lunch ticket." Well, Joey, fifth grade boy, raised his hand, and he flashed an obscene gesture at the teacher. And he said, "Well, you are going to have to give me a dollar every day, because I ain't got no lunch tickets, and my sister's a horrible person, and she spends all her money on drugs." And the teacher, experienced teacher, he looked at the student, and he smiled, and he said, "Joey, how nice to have you here this year." And he took the fight right away from that student. Now, he would probably not have done that if he'd been teaching for 1 or 2 or 3 years. He would have probably reacted. So I'm giving you a head start here a little bit. That's the way to handle that situation. Hope you don't have that situation, certainly. But treat every person with respect. And make sure that you do not look at a student as a problem. Make sure that you don't look at a student as if they are a problem. A student has problems. Usually most of them are the result of other people's choices. And what happens when you look at a student as a problem is that becomes their identity in your mind. And it's hard to have compassion for a problem. But if you look at them as a student, as a child who needs your care, that's first of all what you have to think of, that this is a child who needs your care. And of course, this is true too for parents. If you disrespect a parent, we're not really talking about making connections to the parents, but that's true here. If you disrespect a parent, you will probably have lost the respect of their child. And this is true even if the parents and the child and the parents are not getting along. Now, there can be a little bit of a temptation when there's conflict between a child and his parents or her parents for a teacher to capitalize on that and kind of commiserate with the student. Don't do that. It's not helpful. Short term, it might look good. Long term, the student will not respect you for that, and it will affect your relationship with them. Also, your co-teachers are, you know, people that you hopefully you get along with very well and respect. And your students will also pick up on that too. More times than I can count, and I've taught with very wonderful co-teachers. For the most part, I don't think I've ever had any bad ones. Just say no bad ones for anybody that's listening. And your students really pick up on that. And more times than I can count, I've had students who tried to, you know, just create a little division. Why is Miss or Mr., why does he do that? Why does he make us do that when he's in charge of the playground or whatever? Don't fall for that. They won't respect you more. It feels like they're creating a kinship, but they're really not. It's not something that's helpful. So when those problems come up, it's easy. Same thing with the school board. You know, I hear over and over of schools and teachers, or school boards and teachers that are a little bit in conflict. And you really don't know all the things that the school board is doing for you. I will say here in this group especially that school boards are probably the unsung heroes. They do so much work for you. And they do all this work for you, and they don't get the joy of actually being with the students every day, being with the children every day. Sometimes you'd be glad to just let them, maybe, but for the most part, I'm guessing that all of you really enjoy your students. You enjoy being with your students, and that's maybe what drives you some. The school board does not have that, and they still have a big workload. And there are just small ways you can do that, some ways almost in jest. One of the things that I do in my class, and it's almost become a bit of a joke, is I'll say, well, maybe I should ask the school board about that. So they'll ask, Mr. John, can we pass around the candy jar, please? And he says, well, maybe we should ask the school board. And just show that, actually, I have somebody in authority over me that I do respect. Now, maybe you don't think I'm showing respect in that way, but in my mind I am, and I think my students pick that up. The second point here is to be kind. I know I said this earlier, but it is really so foundational to being successful in keeping your relationships open with your students when you come to difficulties. It's really so foundational. In fact, it's probably the most important thing here. Okay? They won't remember how smart you are lots of times, but they will remember whether or not you were kind and you made them feel safe. So keep your cool. I had a fifth grader, who was struggling with his language arts, and he was just barely getting passing grades, and I worked with him and tried to help him, tried to show him the fundamentals he's missing, and he just wasn't getting it. We were working with Christian Light, and so he did the test, and he failed it. And so we did the alternate test, did some remedial work, did the alternate test, and he failed that. Well, in our school, that means that you have to redo the Light unit. And so I went to this boy very gently and told him, you know, I'm sorry, you did not pass the test. And that means, I guess, we're going to have you redo the light unit. I'm sorry about that, but you can do this. You get through this. We'll make sure that you can keep up. And he was a little weepy. He was pretty sad, but he was willing to do it. And his mother came to me shortly afterwards and said and told me that she heard that her son had failed his test. And if I remember right, the student had gone home and said, "Mom, I thought Mr. John was going to be mad, but he was really nice. And I'm so glad I have such a good teacher." And his mom was telling me, I was really glad too that she was really, I was really glad too that my son has such a good teacher. And I was like, yes! I fooled them. Now they think I'm patient. But you know what? It seriously was a great step forward in our connection, in our relation, both with me and the student and the son, and me and the parents. And that was a really good thing. I was grateful for that opportunity, and I was grateful that I actually got it right that time. The second point in this one is to be gentle. And it's very closely connected here. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. And I had a student also who was struggling in algebra. And I'll call her Andrea. And she had stayed in for recess, and she asked me, "Mr. John, could you help me with my algebra?" I said, "Sure, what are you working on?" So she brought it to my desk, and we went through this problem. If I remember right, it's one of the longer five-step problems where she sets up an equation and solves the problem. And I found out, we looked at her problem, I found out where she was building her equation wrong, essentially. And we discussed how to fix it. But, you know, it was a big problem. It's one of these problems that take up most of a page. And she looked at it. She'd done quite a bit of work. She put her elbow on the desk and her chin in her hands, and I saw it, you know, a tear come down her eye. And I said, "Andrea, is something else wrong?" And she said, "No, I just don't want to fail. I just don't want to fail." I said, "Well, don't worry. You're really doing all right here. Algebra is not easy. It's not supposed to be easy. And we'll get through this. And I believe you can do this. You're really doing a good job. Just keep up that good discipline and good work habits that I see you doing." You know, that young lady persevered, and she began to like algebra and to love algebra, and she would often ask me about her problems, her algebra problems. And on the final test, if I remember right, she got a 98 on her final test. And she left that year just loving algebra and saying, "Is there another algebra that we can do?" "Well, yeah, there's algebra too." So that's great. That was one time where I really, really connected with a student through algebra. And it was a good thing. Avoid assuming that you know what the person is facing. It is just always so easy to assume that you know the problem. And quite often we don't. My grandpa Dan and grandma Martha were married for over 60 years, and this was actually my grandpa's second marriage because his first wife had died in childbirth or from childbirth complications and leaving him six little girls. So he married the maid who had nine more children for him, and one of which was my father. So when Grandpa died, he died very suddenly. He died of a heart attack, and we had a large funeral. And most of the family was there. It was a really good time. We told lots of stories, cried and laughed, prayed together. It was a healing time for us, as a good funeral should be. But, you know, a month or so later, Grandma was just really grieving. really going through a low time. And one of the daughters stopped in to see her and was trying to comfort her. And she said, "Mom, you need to just think of Dad up in heaven. He's up there enjoying heaven, seeing all his friends who've gone on ahead of him." And Grandma said, "I know, that's just it. He's up there with his first wife." And completely missed the struggle that she was having. So when you assume that you know what a person is facing, you might be wrong, right? I have found so many times in school when I was developing a little distrust of my students, when I was distrustful maybe of what I thought was happening at home, that I was wrong, or if I thought that I knew what should be done. So many times what I assumed was wrong. Sometimes there is serious conflict at home. One of the sad facts about teaching schools, you often find that home life for some of your students is very chaotic. And this is often concealed for a long time. But it usually comes out in the end. And you know, a home life that is full of drama is so deeply unsettling to a child. I've seen the effect that it can have, that a student wants to come to school because it's a safe place. And that's a good thing if the school is a safe place. That's a wonderful thing. That's what we want. And yet, that home life leaves deep scars. It will still be seen in school. It's very, very, it's not ideal for a child's development. Also, there are lots of learning disabilities that we run into. Maybe you have a student, and we'll call him Jay. He's one of your students, and Jay has been diagnosed with fetal alcohol syndrome, and he has serious mood swings. Some days he is brilliant and attentive, fairly attentive. Other days he's just a black thundercloud. He's competitive by nature, and he becomes angry with himself when he can't remember what we have studied, especially when the others in his class can just breeze right through things. How do we help him? How do we relate to him? Well, if you are a teacher, most likely you have not struggled with the struggles that he has. And so be slow to jump to assumptions that you know how to fix his problems. And those of you who have worked with students with fetal alcohol syndrome, you know that it's just difficult. And be wary of pat answers and quick answers. I guess I would just say show compassion. What about students with health issues? I had a student once with we didn't know what was wrong with him. And he did not concentrate well at all. One of the things we found about him eventually, after years actually, was that he had a terrible diet. Basically, the foods that he enjoyed was mac and cheese. It's wonderful. And sweets like Twinkies and ice cream. Imagine if that was your diet, okay? Does that affect you at all? Does it affect your moods? Does it affect your study habits? One of the things I noticed it first, seriously, when I took him to town with me, which I often did, I'd take him to town with me. His parents worked, and so he was kind of the only one at home, if I remember right. I had a cabinet shop, bring him over there, and he would work with me sometimes. We'd go into town, buy supplies. I took him to town anyway, and we went to Golden Corral. Now, I know that Golden Corrals are sometimes kind of this scummy buffet, but the one we had in Springfield, Missouri was really good. There's a lot of competition there for restaurants, and so it was a good buffet at that time. It had good steak, very good steak, and fried fish and shrimp and fried chicken and roast beef and probably some things for the vegetarians too, but lots of good food on the menu. So we went in there and sat down, and I went and got my food and sat down and ready to go. And here comes my student, and he has a plate filled with mac and cheese. Huh, mac and cheese. That's what you, yeah, that's what I like. And I think maybe cottage cheese too or something. So he ate his plate, and I went back and got another one because, after all, you know, it's free food after you pay for it. So, and I got another plate of food, and he got another plate of mac and cheese. Really, mac and cheese? And I went back for again, and I don't remember if he went back for a third plate, and then I went back for another plate, I think, and he went back for another plate, and I thought, surely he's not going to get mac and cheese again. And he didn't. He got ice cream that time. So, but you know, that was something that had a real effect on him. And I've had other students over the years who are allergic to sugar or to candles that you might burn, or gluten or dairy, all kinds of things. And if you don't have those allergies, you can be skeptical of them. And I'm glad if you don't have those allergies. But they are real things. They affect people. And just understand that can actually affect their study habits, things too. I also had another student who had sleep issues. I didn't know that, though. This student was inattentive. He struggled with his work, and he would yawn, he would look bored, and he seemed like he was just simply lazy. That's what it looked like, because when you really pushed him, he would get his work done. But we found out later that he was not getting very much sleep at all. They lived in a small house, and he didn't have his own bedroom, so he slept in the living room, and because of his father's business, there was a lot of coming and going. He often wouldn't get to sleep till 12:30 or 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, for a young boy growing up, that's very unhealthy. And it had a large effect on his ability to concentrate and study. So as you think about this and you think about connecting here, a couple things as we think about relating to our students in this way, just a couple things. Focus on the cause and not the symptoms, number one. And in that way, I'm just going to divide it into two really simple things. Look at the things that you can change. There's things that we can change and things that we can't. So look at the things that you can change. Now, in the case of the one student that I mentioned who had a really bad diet, I'd been thinking that we should up our phys ed program. Okay, so we started doing a lot more serious phys ed. We did upper body workouts, I think, 3 times a week, and lower body workouts 2x a week or so. And we started doing chin-ups and all kinds of things. And I remember when we started with him, he could not, I think maybe he could do one chin-up. He was really slow. And he was also overweight. His bad diet, was overweight, so he was terribly slow. And so because he was slow, he didn't enjoy games, you know. And created a whole host of other things. But we started doing this. We started running when we started, like I said, the chin-ups, upper body workouts. And you know, he progressed, and he got faster and stronger, and he inserted himself more into classroom conversations, and his grades improved, and he enjoyed recess more and games more. And also his behavior definitely improved. You know, by the time he left school, I think he could do 30 chin-ups. And yeah, 30 chin-ups, lots of push-ups. And he was the fastest runner in school at that time. He was also far and away the most physically fit member of his family, too. So in that situation, there was something I couldn't change, but there was something that we could, and we worked on that. Now, there are some things that you simply can't change. And as a teacher, you know, the things that will break your heart are the things that you can't change. A home life where the father and the mother are not getting along, that has such sad consequences, whether it's anger or physical abuse or something like that. My first year of teaching, I had two young ladies as students who had a father with a drinking problem. And these girls loved their father, and they were loyal to him. But when he started drinking, things were really bad. This was in Central America too, by the way. He would be sober for a while. He would start drinking. It would get worse and worse, and he would eventually start doing demonic things. He would start praying to Satan, actually. And it was interesting too, whenever he was in that state, he would attack his wife, who was a Christian, and these girls who were also Christians. And he would tear off their prayer veiling. It was one of the first things he would do. He would attack them and he would go for that. He saw that as a threat to him. And, you know, I just remember seeing the fear in their eyes. And, you know, this was something. This is something they couldn't, we couldn't change. As much as we would have wanted to, we couldn't change that. So what did we do? Well, we worked at just showing compassion and being there for them, being supportive. And I will say I had very good relations with those girls, very good connections with them. But I couldn't fix their problems. It was sad. Number four, be quiet before you offer advice. One of the things that I can't seem to change too, one of the problems that I can't seem to change too, is that I get emotional easily. I wish I could change that, but it just seems like I can't. Maybe there's some therapy group online I could work with and do different exercises, I don't know. But so far I haven't found it. So I ask you to be patient with me. The fourth point is be quiet before you offer advice. I had a high school boy. I really enjoyed this young man. But he was acting up in school. He was showing a restlessness and a rebellious attitude. And I was puzzled, and I was just a little hurt by it because I'd had really good relations with him, really good connection with him, enjoyed him as a student. And I didn't think I had changed. I wasn't being unreasonable. And why is he acting like this? And so I finally kept him in at recess and asked him, you know, how are things going, Joe? And he was this tough guy. He'd been working out. He was fast and strong and tough. And, you know, he just started crying. And he said, it's not going well. And I waited a little bit, and then I told him what I was seeing that was wrong. And, you know, I'd like him to change. You know, see some things in your attitude and your behavior here, and I would like to see that change. Well, you know, I found out later that the home life that I thought he had was a complete facade, was completely false. This happy family life that I thought I saw was wrong. And things were very bad for him at home. And I've thought about this situation different times. If I would have just been quiet and let him talk to me, would that have helped anything? I don't know for sure, but I felt real regret that I was so quick to jump in and tell him what was wrong, what I was seeing that was wrong. So be quiet before you offer advice. Look for the opportunities in the difficulties. This is the next point. I don't think it's on your outline. In August of 2020, we were looking forward with some uncertainty to the next school year. Our state had a lot of COVID regulations in place, and we were not going to be allowed to get together as a school. Just lots of things that were going to change in our school year. So we were concerned about how we were going to work with all the things we were asked to do. But it turned out the best thing for us to do was to have school in five different locations. We had small learning pods, is what they were called. And so I cleaned out my garage, polished the floor, got somebody in to actually grind the floor down and polish it nice, and I painted all the walls, and I think I built some cabinets, and did numerous things, put up a nicer basketball hoop and things, put in a ping pong table, put up dart boards. But I wasn't sure how this is going to go. But the thing I did know is that the ending of 2019, where we had to close school for the last 8 weeks, essentially, told me that I don't like to do remote schooling. I don't like to be a Zoom teacher. I hated it. I actually like teaching because of the connection with the students that you have. I do not want to be a video teacher. So I was really glad that we were able to get together physically in the same location there. But I wasn't sure how it would go. But you know, it turned out great. It was a fantastic experience for us. The students were very glad to get back together. I had a terrific group of students. The parents were all supportive. There were a number of unique things that we did that year that we wouldn't normally do. Well, it was my garage, right? I can do what I want in my garage. So I painted murals on the wall and put up dart boards. And they could throw darts. And if they hit the dartboard, that was great. If they missed it, it wasn't so bad because it was my garage. And it was kind of funny. There was a lot of competition over the darts. We had a contest with the darts. We didn't play actual dart games very much. But there was a contest to see who could get the highest score every week. And if you know, there's a triple ring, there's a double ring, there's a bullseye on a dartboard, right? And the bullseye is worth 50 points, but the triple ring, the 20, is worth 60 points. So if you can squeeze all three darts into the 20 ring, the triple 20 ring, that's 180 points. Well, nobody actually hit it. But the students would come, and first thing in the morning, they'd go over there and throw darts. You'd throw three and see what your highest score is. And if it falls out, doesn't count, you know, few rules in place. And if you got a high score, then you put it up, wrote it on the chalkboard, wrote your name, wrote it on the chalkboard. So you'd have 107 or something. Then somebody would get 110, and they'd erase your name and write their name and put that up. And the person with the highest score at the end of the week, we'd paint their name on the wall, right, with their score. That was fun. And they really got into it. And you know, boys against girls, and it was great. I could do that because it was my garage. I could also paint murals on the wall, like I said. We also did book reports. And after they were done with their book report, you paint the name of the book on the wall. And we also painted each person's name and then put... I'm just saying, we had some opportunities that we normally wouldn't have had. Now, you can probably do all those things in your classroom. Your school board might not care. But it was just a little bit different because it was my garage. I could do it. It was an opportunity. So in conclusion, what do you think of when you think of mountains? You think of obstacles or opportunities. Now, I happen to really be interested in mountain climbing. And I was thinking about telling a mountain climbing story, but I also decided that this morning I'm gonna not be long-winded, so I don't think I will. But I want to tell you just a little bit about mountain climbing. And when you're climbing a really big mountain, a big snowy mountain, you often start very early in the morning. And I've started at 11 o'clock, midnight sometimes, which is pretty early. And so you start, it's dark. Hopefully you get a full moon night so you can see well and the moon shines off the snow and it's beautiful. And you start and there's high energy. And hopefully you have a nice group of people to go with too. It's a lot harder if you're going by yourself. You're just going with a nice group of people. It's high energy and you walk. But you know what? It's not too far into those things and you start to, it's hot. I mean, you're starting to sweat. You got a little jacket on because it's cold, and you start to sweat and you get hot. And there's a time about 3 or 4 or 5 hours in, and it seems like it happens every time, where it's still very dark, and you start to feel sick. I don't know what you ate for breakfast. Maybe it was just beef jerky or maybe it was something from McDonald's or something like that. and it's not sitting very well, you start to get a little queasy. You can't see where you're going very well anyway. And I've seen so many people give up right there. It's just hard. But if you keep pushing through, just keep pushing through, and when dawn comes, and you can see the mountain, which is still big usually, or sometimes it's still big. Sometimes you're a long ways up the mountain. But when dawn comes, and that sunlight comes across the snow and across the rocks and across the pine trees down below, and you see this beautiful view, then you can forget the stomachache a little bit. And when I think of mountains, I think of the opportunities that they give us and the view that we have. And looking back, I'm thankful for the mountains.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at christianlearning.org or call 814-789-4769. Many Faith Builders recordings are also available on the Dock for Learning at thedockforlearning.org.